Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, how you doing, Internet? It is May 15th, 2017. I had to look at my computer to make sure I knew what date it was. You are listening to Waypoint Radio. We are live from Lobby 1. I'm Danielle Riendo. I'm obviously not Austin. That's why I couldn't say what's good, Internet, because, you know, that's his catchphrase. I am joined here today by Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest. This is the most special guest ever. This is Pat Bear, live from the Bear Cave, here on Waypoint Radio.
Hey, we're here in the Bear Cave. I'm Pat Bear, and I just want to say, what's good, Internet?
Oh, see, well.
See, I will say
it. I'll
take the heat for Austin and say it.
Guests are allowed to do that. You're just in and out.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, I'll disappear. See me again next time you guys do a live stream that goes 72 hours.
All right.
And I'll reappear.
All right, you know, we'll play a better game.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the last time I saw you, Pat, it was not great. We were in a bad place. It was late at night. We were playing a deeply offensive video game
Harvester.
That we did not expect to be
yes.
as bad as it was.
I mentioned this, Danielle, but in the chat, if people were saying, oh, you shouldn't play this, they were apparently warning us.
They weren't kidding.
They were not joking.
Yeah, I took that as encouragement at first. Like, exactly. That's why we're playing this. It's 72 hours. Get over it. But yeah, they were right. We probably shouldn't have played
Here's
that game.
Here's the thing. That game is Harvester is an old, bad game
mm-hmm.
that somebody decided they were going to republish.
That's
so it's not our fault.
Look, nothing's ever my fault, Pat. So I'm, you know.
You're right.
That's fair. That's more than fair. So, Pat, other than, you know, taking catchphrases and mm-hmm, things like that, what have you been playing? What have you been up to lately?
Oh, okay. So, you know, I'm not a game journalist. I'm a comedian. So I don't.
That's fair.
I'm not always playing the brand new hotness, the thing that just came out.
Neither am I.
So I'm playing Flint Hook right now, which is pretty recent. I played it a lot at PAX East when it was in the Indie Mega Booth.
Nice.
And kind of fell in love with it being like, kind of a Rogue Legacy style roguelike, but also having some platforming, and it's all like puzzle solving platforming. I'm not good at that game, Danielle. And Patrick, I'm very bad at it. I get into a room and I'm like, I feel like I have the rhythm, and then I'm dead. And I was like, oh, I didn't have the rhythm for that. But it's really beautiful and fun and. The thing about it is, with any platformer, especially hard platformers, is if it feels good while you're doing it, then there are moments where I feel like I'm out of control, like a little bit, and it might be input lag, or it might just be me. I guess I haven't decided
Person
yet.
Person lag, you know, like...
Because I can watch people be very good at it, so that makes me think it might be me. But it's really satisfying, and I like that about roguelikes. Like, roguelikes should be hard, and you should be like, well, I was never going to beat that room. But it also should feel like, oh, everything came together, and I did it. And now I can go to this next room on this space pirate ship thing.
I have complicated. I wrote an article for Waypoint about Flint Hook a couple weeks back where I think it's probably, In 2017, the year of our Lord of all good video games, I am loath to speak too soon, but it would shock me if I played a better, like, better feeling video game than Flint Hook. Like, what originally got me into that game, I was same as you, I played it at a PAX East, this year, but last year, and just was blown away just how... just smooth and like what I wanted to do, I could do. And I'm also a sucker for games that have hook shots, and there just aren't that many platformers with hook shots, which is weird I mean, like, video games have done zombies to death, but, like, let's do hookshots to death, please. Like, let's add a little more in that column. And I really, really enjoy playing that game. And in the moment-to-moment, I enjoy playing that game. But, and this is a piece I might write this week because I felt similarly after putting an hour or so into Strafe, which is a game that, Danielle, I know you played and liked and wrote about a couple of times last week. And Strafe is a throwback to sort of 90s first-person shooters, using sort of blocky, Quake-like graphics, but it is structured in a roguelike. And I think they're both games that have really well-done mechanics thrown into a gameplay structure that ostensibly I like, right? Like, Spelunky is one of my favorite games of all time. I got nothing against roguelikes, but they're... Maybe it's just me, or maybe it's a moment, but it feels like I'm often finding games these days that I'm playing where the base game, I really like playing it. I just wish it wasn't in a roguelike, right? Like, I want Flint Hook in a structured Mega Man-style just platformer. Like, I just want structured, authored levels made by the developers in a Shovel Knight style. Right? Like, Shovel Knight could have been a roguelike, but I don't think Shovel Knight would have been a better game as a roguelike. And I struggle over, like... Is the reason I'm critical of these games because I'm tired of, like, it feels like so many games I should like, I don't like as much because a lot of them are falling into the roguelike trap or preferring to design for roguelikes as a larger gameplay structure? Or are they doing the roguelike part wrong, right? Like, is it that they've actually just implemented the roguelike design in a way that is not as fun as it should be? And I don't know. I just know that Strafe and Flint Hook are games I probably would have spent a lot more time with if I knew that I was just progressing from level to level in a more traditional structure, and the fact that they're roguelikes actually puts me off from wanting to play them more. Because, like, in Flint Hook, when you get to, like, the fourth or fifth boss, like, you're looking at spending 45 minutes on a run, and then you get to the boss, and maybe you're hobbled and you have no health, or maybe you, like, ran into a spike room that you just screwed up right before you got to that. I don't know. I found it frustrating in a way that I wasn't enjoying as much as I wish I was.
Yeah, if Flint Hook was a Metroidvania style game.
Oh my god. Stop it, Pat. Don't say those things. Because they're not true.
I know they're not true. But yeah, I mean, and who knows? You'd see these speed runs probably if every room was static. And like the order you got your abilities in changed depending on how the run you were doing. You know, you could see people like speedrunning it, and it like, who knows? Maybe they made that game, and they were like, "Nope, this isn't the version."
Yeah, I mean, and I respect that, right? Like, I'm conscious of the fact that I may be bouncing off it, and it's me bouncing off it as opposed to it being a problem with the game. I just feel like there's just been a recently, and like No Man's Sky contributed. So like, my theory or what I'm wondering is like, No Man's Sky used a. The fact that they were a small team that wanted to create an enormous world, and they solved that through procedural generation, right? They said, we cannot author enough individual planets to convey the world we want, so we're going to do that through procedural generation. And in some ways, like roguelikes function in a similar way. It's not procedural generation, but it's pulling from authored pieces to create the illusion of an authored level. And I sometimes wonder, are there games that are trying to create something more ambitious than what they actually are capable of pulling off, and they're using roguelike tools to accomplish it, whereas maybe Flint Hook would have been better served for the mechanics that it does well as a more structured, traditional, like Shovel Knight-type game, because that team... But I don't know, maybe the team couldn't create that game. They didn't feel confident, so they did roguelike to try and meet him halfway, and I don't know. I'm just bummed, because Flint Hook is really good, and I want... It should be a game that is like one of my favorite games of this year, and I feel like it's not going to be because I got, you know, I was frustrated with its structure, and I'm still bummed out.
I think if it came out in 2016, it would be in most people's top 10.
Well, yeah, 2017 is a problem. Yeah, 2017 is a problem for a lot of very good video games that are going to be... Like, people aren't going to have top 10 lists this year. They're, like, top 20 lists because there's just, like, no way, given how many games are coming out every week, that you can whittle it down. It's not going to be fun in December, I'll say.
Oh, no.
It's a problem. I think it's a problem for the big games that are, like... are losing to other big games, and it's a problem for indie games that, like, I think are going to fall through the cracks because you're like, well, I still have, like, I still didn't play Prey yet. So, like, I'm probably going to play Prey. But does that mean that I'm going to pick up three other games that are $10 each, you know, the next couple months and have them just sit in my Steam library? Like, I don't know.
I mean, that's the story of my life is like, oh, yeah, I'll get these 10 games and then I'll play one, like, and a half of them for sure.
It's like I bounced off Nier because it just wasn't hitting me, but I know it will. It's just not, I think it's like just didn't sit with me. But I also, like, I freed myself because I was like, I'm not going to play Persona 5 anymore. I'm done.
I played 15 hours of that and then had to walk away because I'm going to go back to it because I want to see more of Persona 5. But it was just like, I know that game is 100 hours. Like, the 15 hours I put into Persona is like another game I could have just finished. And so.
So here's what I did. Uh-huh. So about 10, 12 hours into Persona 5, I'm like, I don't like anyone. I don't even like me in this game. I don't like anybody. Fair. I don't like what's happening. I like the dungeons. That's about it. So I was like, you know what? My last Persona 4 playthrough was last year. I don't feel like playing Persona 4 again. So I'm just going to watch the Persona 4 anime. And that was what I did. And that got me my Persona fix.
Yeah, how many times have you beaten Persona 4?
Like five.
Holy crap, dude. Yeah.
Pat.
But, I mean, the same save. I new game, the same save.
You know, what do you do on the fifth playthrough?
There'll be a playthrough where I'm like, I'm going to make choices. Like, I'm not going to hook up with anybody. Okay. I'm going to be everyone's best friend. I'm going to friend zone myself. We'll do the friend zone playthrough.
The friend zone playthrough.
All right.
Yeah, because there are characters that want to date you because you're a good dude.
You're friend zoning them from you.
Yes. Yeah, okay. You're isolating yourself. I see. You're like, you all don't talk enough with each other about what I'm doing here. Because that's really the thing about Persona 4 is that you can play that game as a long con with lots of ladies.
Oh,
and
boy.
Then because everyone knows you're moving away. It's bad. So you can just be friends.
So you've done that playthrough before.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm seeing.
Oh,
okay.
I did a playthrough where...
The player playthrough? Is that what you call that one? All right.
Danielle, I'll give you that one.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, a player playthrough is definitely a version of the game. Or, like, I'm going to, like, min-max, like, I have all of these persona. Like, I have all these cool, like, battling, like, all right, let me get the best in the world.
Yeah.
Let me play with Alice, who is way too over, like, she's like a Death Arcana and, like, way too overpowered.
Perfect.
And I'll start with her and just wipe the floor with every dungeon. But, like, it's probably my favorite game I've ever played. So
I was going to say, that game is no, you know, that's what, even though you know what you're doing, that game's got to be at least 60, 70 hours, right?
But it comes down to, like, I was like, I don't want to play Persona 5. I guess I'm playing Persona 4 again. Oh, I don't want to play through the beginning of that game again. So I was just like, I guess I'll just watch the anime. and then, like,
you know your life is at a low point when your choices are, oh, I guess I'll just watch the anime. So,
well,
you know.
So 2017 Pat Bear is...
I don't know about this judgment, guys.
Well, I pulled back from wrestling because I'm a wrestle dork. But I pulled back from wrestling and double down on anime.
I know
I'm hurting you, Patrick, but like, I just like, you know, I'm now. Oh, here's where I'm at in 2017. I'm considering a second streaming anime subscription service. Yeah,
you know.
Anime Strike has three things I want to watch. That's worth $5.
That's fair.
It has three things that I want to watch. It makes me mad. Yeah. I wish Crunchyroll had everything that I want to watch, but it doesn't. Anime Strike has three things.
I got you.
So I guess I have to get Anime Strike.
I mean, I do this with UFC Fight Pass and Flow Grappling because UFC Fight Pass doesn't have enough pure jiu-jitsu tournaments on it. I got it.
I also
do the same thing, but not with anime. I have Crunchyroll. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I don't hate anime. Look, we've got like a good like medium cool and hot here for anime in this lovely group right here.
I think that's a fair description.
You know, I think that's pretty good.
People should watch Interviews with Monster Girls.
Interviews with Monster Girls.
The last season, the hotness last season was Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid. Like, that's the thing that people were like, this is the best show. And it's good. But it falls into that point where you can't recommend it to some people because of, well, you can't watch this episode because of the Twister thing. And you're like, yep, you can't watch that episode. You can't recommend that show
what
now.
What is the Twister thing?
There are characters.
Should
that,
I not ask?
There are characters that are in a situation that are, even by anime standards, in my opinion, too young to be in this episode.
Okay.
So.
All right. Fair.
And people who like that show, like, you have to just be like, that's the part that's not great. But then this other thing happens and it's awesome.
Even by anime standards. That's,
yes.
That's, Pat, I find that whole phrasing is distressing.
I think maybe that's our episode title. Even by anime standards. Maybe, Tim, if you want to write that down, that's like pretty good.
But interviews with Monster Girls.
Okay.
Like, I recommend that. Like, with no, like, 100%.
All the way.
It's a high school where there are demi-chans, monster girls.
Okay.
And it's a rare thing, but people know about it. So people are, like, kind of freaked out. But they become friends, like a vampire girl and a Dullahan.
What is a demi-chan?
So they like calling themselves demi-chans. They're monsters.
Oh, monsters?
So monsters,
okay.
There's a vampire girl,
yeah.
There's an ice woman, which is Japanese folklore, and then there's a, so I didn't know this, but the Headless Horseman myth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Headless Horseman?
Yeah.
That in Celtic is called the Dullahan. So there's this girl who's one of three in the world that is, she just like, a teal flame is coming out of her neck, and she just carries her head around.
Okay, that sounds cool.
There's the math teacher is a succubus, and
okay, that's perfect. One of my favorite trash sci-fi shows ever is about a bisexual succubus who has to have sex with people to live. Watch Lost Girl.
She's trying her best to she dresses very plainly,
sure.
And like tries not to like freak people out.
Yeah, she's doing her thing. Yeah. She's at work. There's work her, and then there's like after dark her.
Well, yeah,
she's got her life separate.
Yeah, got her life separate. Suppressed it completely.
Yeah, good.
And there's a teacher who's like trying to be a good dude and like trying to help these people. Just like he's trying to help students, but he's also like, oh, it's really cool that I get to meet monsters. Like he's self-aware enough that he's like, I always wanted to study them, and that didn't work out, but now three of them are in my school.
And he gets to try to help them out.
It's so sweet and awesome and, like, nice and just, like,
fun.
And there's, like, the Dullahan has a crush on the teacher because he's strong, and that's what she's looking for in a guy is someone that can, like, carry her head around without dropping it. Like, that's very important to her.
That's what every woman wants, okay?
Right, yeah.
You know, like, I'll just say it. That's what every woman wants. Somebody to carry their head around. Help you carry.
It's what I did for my wife on Mother's Day. It's like, here's
that's
your
right.
gift. I'm going to carry
right.
your head around.
I have to ask. I know we're a little all over the place, but I have to ask, Patrick, how was it? How was your first, I mean, I know Father's Day is coming up. This is going to be your first Father's mm-hmm. Day. But how was your first Mother's Day with your wife and your youngin'?
It was good. Awesome. Our child continues to be alive. My wife continues to be an excellent mother. So
excellent.
It's good. And unfortunately, take care of a kid is like it's difficult to like I'm just gonna handle all this for you. Shut up, dog. Just shut up.
Oh, Pixel.
Just shut up.
No. Pixel wanted to say. Pixel's trying to say
person.
Like, oh yeah, she's a great mom.
Shut up, dog. Yeah. Anyway, so it just babies are demons, and there's not much I can take off her hands. The kid, you kind of need. Two people to handle the kid. I mean, obviously you could do it with one person, but I don't know how those people do it. That is a tall order. And now having experienced it firsthand.
Wow. I congratulate you on your baby still being alive.
Thank you.
It's a good thing to do. Yeah. Very good. It sounds like, you know, you got to take some of those lessons from interviews with Monster Girls.
Yeah.
You got to take your little demon. You got to try to help them carry their head around. I mean, babies have really big heads for their body, right? You have to, like, literally support their heads. So.
Well, yeah. Babies are human babies.
Mm-hmm. are
born too soon.
It's true.
They come out of the womb before they should. So then we have to be really careful and good about it.
You got to be real careful with your little ones. Speaking of Persona, my girlfriend finished Persona 5 this week. I watched the whole thing. This was a situation. I don't know if you guys have ever had gamer partners, but it's like wonderful 99% of the time because you get to share things with them. You get to be like, baby, I'm playing this game. It's so cool. We get to sort of watch each other play games and sort of get a sense of things. This weekend, Saturday, at around, I'm going to say around noon, I wake up and I'm like, I want to play Prey, honey. And she's like, okay, I'm in the last boss. 8 p.m., she finally finished the game. So she was in the last boss for like 8 hours.
Well, I want to say, I saw on Twitter that she seemed distressed over the fact that Persona 5 was about to end. Was not feeling great about the fact that this game was going to reach its end credits.
Yeah, she put like 140 something hours into it. Like, she really saw everything and she was a little sad that night. I was like, why don't I take you out to dinner? Because she was like, oh, it ended. I feel very bittersweet, you know, that sort of thing. It's okay. She doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can talk about her.
Okay.
But it was very, like, I saw the ending and I watched her play like a good chunk. Obviously, she's playing it when I'm not around as well. But, you know, I saw, like, for the last month of our life, I was doing a lot of, I'm playing Zelda on the Wii U. And she's playing Persona 5 on the TV. And so I'm, like, checking in with the game and seeing how the relationships are going. And that was actually a pretty great way to experience that game. Kind of watching. And she makes decisions that I respect. If she didn't, we'd have a problem. But she actually makes, like, good decisions that I'm like, okay, that's what I would have said. All right, we're good here.
The last time I did that with somebody that I was, like, living with or with was, like, playing, you know, the kind of, like, adventure game style thing where it's just like, I'm sitting here and you're sitting there. Let's make these decisions together.
Yes.
And, like,
those are
you've got to have somebody that either 100% is just like, yeah, we did it, or is completely the opposite. And you're like, no, I don't. Okay, that worked out great. But you have to be like, all right, you made the right call.
Yeah.
Or, no, please go with my gut this time. Let's go with my gut. Because, like, it's like, oh, we're playing The Walking Dead together. And no, let's not make him silent again. Let's, like, make a decision this time.
Yeah.
The first time I played that game, it was a lot of him just, like, not saying anything because we couldn't agree.
You would time out.
Yeah, we would time out constantly.
Oh, no.
It was not great.
Yeah. Oh, those are fun. I know, Patrick, you've talked about definitely playing a lot of Telltale games like that with your wife, which is, it's fun. I don't know. It's something I always think is very interesting, playing games with your significant other and sort of how that changes whether or not you're both kind of like gamers, or if you're playing with somebody who's not necessarily a super, you know, super into games, but they're interested in certain types of games. I always want to hear stories about that stuff. I don't know why. It's just funny to me and interesting to me. Let's take a little dip in the question bucket. I think it's probably about that time, unless either of you have pressing issues you'd like to bring up before the question.
I will mention, so I'm continuing to play through Prey, which I assume you probably finished this weekend, Danielle. Did you actually?
I'm 28 hours in, and I'm not even close to being done. Because I am like, actually, I am so attached to these people now in this world. I think they're actually really well-written and fairly subtly written for this type of game. So I'm like, oh no, I need to finish like at least 3/4 of all the little quests I've picked up.
Yeah, so. I'm in the middle of, I don't want to spoil how the quest works too much, but I'll say it involves the D&D game that you discover, and there is a side quest that is associated with it that is, I haven't solved it yet, but it's incredibly clever, and looking up some details about it, because I was trying to figure out, like, it's this puzzle you're doing that's related to their D&D game that they're playing in space. And I just wanted to see if, like, the loot was worth, like, me going down the puzzle. And it's funny because I saw, the puzzle you're trying to solve will ultimately lead to a safe code. And the safe code, if you enter it in ahead of actually solving and finding all the things in game, the game apparently debuffs you, makes it like you slower. Like, the game punishes you for like cheating because
for looking it up.
Yeah, it's pretty smart.
That's really good.
I've the fact that the game would be conscious of that and take it into account, I think, is really funny and clever. But I had this sequence this morning where there are these big kind of floating sort of like cacodemon type creatures called telepaths that you often will encounter. They're really challenging on their own, especially for you, I imagine, Danielle, because you're playing a soldier type and
I'm playing like no alien powers,
right? And they become significantly easier to deal with when you get access to a fire power, because then you can they're just really weak to that, and they become a lot easier to deal with. But anyway, you often find them not on their own, but also with like a bunch of marionettes. Like they're able to subjugate the humans on board. And what I find interesting about them is that they name all the humans that they are mind controlling. So they all have names, and when you save them, unless it's story relevant, they don't like become NPCs. They just like collapse unconscious. But yeah. By giving them a name and not making them sort of like mindless engineer, like I have felt this desire to try and save them from the telepath, as opposed to just what would be easier, which is just to kill them before they come right. after me. Because the way the mind controlled enemies work is that they run at you sort of like the Serious Sam guys with the bombs on their hands. They just sprint after you and explode. And
yeah, their heads explode.
Yeah, they can one shot you, or at least like mostly take you down. And if there are two around you, you're not going to survive. But so I've been like puzzling out these different scenarios where I'm trying to find a way that I can kind of like hide in a corner of the room so I can take out the telepath with hopefully not sacrificing too many of the mind controlled people, because they're named, I feel like this attachment to them. And also I'm aware that the game is keeping track of like how you engage with different, like I don't know exactly what is participating in the ending. And so in my head, I'm like, all right, well, maybe this is part of it, so I'm going to try and save as many of them as I can. But so I had this sequence where I kind of figured out a way that I could get into the room and take out the telepath without fighting too many of the enemies. But unfortunately, I alerted some of the enemies. They ran after me, and me in my the path I was taking to get up to the little secluded area where I was going to surprise the telepath took them by a line of turrets that I had set up to protect myself from things. And so my line of three turrets just started mowing down like 10, 12 of these mind and you hear the people when they're mind controlled, they are vaguely aware that they are under mind control. So you can hear
them yell, like, don't come near me.
Yeah, they're like shouting,
no, stop
like,
it.
Help me. They're saying help me, and I helped them by luring them into a turret trap, and then pop, 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 pop. It took down about, but ultimately, it turned out I needed to clear out some of them. Like, there was just no way I was going to get into that room without some of those bodies dropping. So I apologize to those engineers and scientists that died in my attempt to defeat the telepath. I saved the rest of them, so
hey, you did something.
I did something.
You did something. The thing is about this game that I love the way it does this, and you were mentioning that they're all named, but not only are they named, but like they're actually people on the station. I don't think there's anybody on that station who has like...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
No email or no at least tracking number or whatever. Like they're actually part of, you know, an employee list or something. Like there's nothing that feels like, oh, this is just a spawned NPC.
Yeah, because you can go
you
can go to a security checkpoint, and sometimes that is part of a side quest where it's like, hey, you need to find this specific person, and then you need to look up which, like in the directory, what department they're associated with, and then you can go and track their bodies down, and you may find that they're part of a mind-controlled Leviathan telepath creature. I do think that like gives like some really interesting weight to what in any other game would just be like, don't worry about those mind-controlled characters. And I actually just unlocked a power after I got through this sequence that allows me to disengage people from the mind control.
Oh.
So the next sequence I get to... where I encounter a telepath, I'll actually be able to do what I wanted to do much easier, where I can just target individual people, snap them out of it.
Save them and then go after them.
Well, and then if you want to go down further down the skill tree, you can not only dispatch them from the telepath, you can then convince them to fight for you through your own telepathy. Oh. I don't think I'm going to go down that path, but it is funny to think that you could save them and then use them as a pawn to sacrifice them in your war with the aliens.
I mean, they're susceptible, you know, to mind control, so you might as well take advantage of it.
Exactly.
You know, if they're going to be puppets, like, it might as well be your puppets.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I agree.
Your puppets.
I agree.
Save humanity.
I won't go too far because I was already, you know, halfway in the question bucket, but, like, I think I'm in love with this game a little bit. I think me and this game
might.
That's the thing, and I mentioned this on Friday, but I've never been this catered to in a big budget game. Like, oh, for sure in smaller games. Like, Gone Home, let's be honest, that's a Danielle-ass Danielle game, but, like, this is. Holy shit, it's kind of amazing.
Ladies be liking other ladies and also saving
four
the universe.
Four space lesbians, yeah. At least.
Yeah.
At least four
Count
space
them.
Lesbians.
Queer,
Count
yeah,
them up.
There
Count
are
them up.
Lots of queer ladies in Prey,
yes.
And it's awesome.
And they're, like, actually queer. It's not just like, oh, we said a thing. It's like, there's, like, a little romance
and
subplot.
And not jokingly queer
right.
And not like,
they're not like,
oh, this lady's not going to like you because she doesn't like dudes. And you're
right.
Like, okay,
it's not like
great
a gross
video
thing.
Game. Yeah. It's just a thing that happens in Prey and is awesome. For lots of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so good. I do hope that game does better than it seems like, maybe.
Well, hey, at least the game exists, which is...
It exists, and it's real good, I think. So, you know, on that note, on the note that I'm getting married to Prey, and you can bless our marriage, you know, however you like, with alien powers or without. Pat, do you have a number from 1 to, let's see, 100 and... Let's call it, like, 114 here. You just feel like a burning need for this number.
Let's go with 24.
24. That's a good number. Let's see. 24 comes from Kai. And this is, by the way, we're in the question bucket.
We're now in the question bucket.
In case you're curious, Kai has a question. Kai writes, my question is related to something Patrick said in the second episode.
Wow.
It's an old one. It's an oldie.
Yeah.
About being somewhat disappointed that franchises like Halo and Gears of War have been turned over to new studios, which seem to have simply created sort of iterated on versions of their predecessors. As a whole, there seem to be far fewer new IPs with this generation. Instead of the big publishers, just seem to be largely pushing iterative sequels out the door, often good, some even great, but none as revolutionary as the original titles when they were first launched. Why do you think publishers have opted to go the iterative sequel route instead of pushing out more new IPs? Sure, it has to do with money. But then again, last generation saw the launch of so many new IPs. Mass Effect, Bioshock, Assassin's Creed, Uncharted, just to name a select few. So why not continue this tradition instead of continuing to go back to the familiar well? Much as I love some of these series, part of me would really just rather see something completely new. Lastly, do you think the overhype for a game like No Man's Sky is at least, in part, a result of gamers actually wishing for the same thing, being new IPs? If it may not have matched most people's expectations, but part of the excitement was finally seeing something truly new that seemed like it was going to take full advantage of the new generation's hardware in ways that a lot of iterative sequels simply haven't. Sorry for the long-winded nature of this question. Love the show so far. Keep up the awesome work. Kai.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason that Sony's done as well as they have this generation, which is complicated by a lot of factors, is the fact that they took some swings on some big new IP, right? Like Bloodborne, you know, which is, you know, Dark Souls-like, but it is a new IP. You know, The Last of Us basically straddled generations at the end of PS3, beginning of PS4. You know, you've got a game like Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, I'm not to say that Microsoft hasn't, you know, done some of that stuff, but I've been, for example, like, it makes a lot of sense for companies to walk the path of a franchise that has proven something that people like and to bring that back. But look at God of War, right? Like, they're bringing back God of War, and it seems to be, like, trying to keep within the spirit of what people liked about those games, but doing something fundamentally different. Like, it's if you were to put those games side by side, like the new God of War and where that series came from, like, you're not gonna confuse the two. You're gonna see the lineage, but they're trying to be bold within constraint. And that's what disappointed me about, like, Halo and Gears of War, was that, okay, if you're gonna do more Halo, do more Gears of War, that's fine, but, like, you know, take the fact that people are familiar with it and try to genuinely surprise them. And I didn't feel like they did. Microsoft did a very good job of that with their two sort of bedrock franchises in shooters. And part of the reason the 360 was as interesting of a platform as it was because a lot of that stuff was brand new back then, right? Like, Crackdown was amazing because it had never existed before. Like, Forza Motorsport was amazing because it hadn't existed before. Like, they just took a lot of big, interesting swings. That also was what the Xbox original wasn't a huge hit. You know, it did okay, but part of the reason it had an identity was because they took big swings on weird games. I think part of the reason No Man's Sky had all the hype was, again, I think it's a complicated situation, but part of that was because people were just genuinely interested in something new. And, you know, publishers have to balance, especially these days, with the cost of AAA games. But, look at, Mass Effect Andromeda. Like, maybe would that game have done better if it didn't have the weight of being a new Mass Effect? But you can see the appeal of making another Mass Effect. And so I think it's a complicated situation for all involved, but I think part of the reason Microsoft has stagnated this generation, outside of things like Kinect and being overpriced and being underpowered, those were all key factors. They really big ol' F in the first party department when it comes to trying something new. And I think that's what you hope for from big first party publishers, is that they're going to fund and get behind genuine risks that try and create an identity for their console. And Microsoft didn't do that, and I wish more companies did. But we've gotten a lot of brand new interesting things this year,
for sure.
It's not always necessarily happening in the AAA games, but I mean, we have gotten quite a bit in 2017.
A couple of games that we've loved this year have been sort of old IP that have taken real risks. Resident Evil 7,
yes.
Feels like, oh yeah, they actually kind of went in a different direction. Zelda, of course, being so different from the typical Zelda.
And yet they both feel like Resident Evil and Zelda, right? Like they did, I don't think
they take that spirit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Last year's two biggest games were Doom and Hitman.
Yes.
We're not it's the mid to late 2010s. We're not done with big IP and big franchises. It's just that there's, in my mind, a big difference between Doom and the last Mass Effect game. In the same way that, there were three God of Wars that were numbered, and then there was, that not God of War.
Yeah, Ascension.
And the same thing,
and
the same thing for Gears. There was Judgment.
Yep.
Gears did the same thing, where it was just you like this, though, right? So here's a fourth one, but it's not a fourth one. And, Halo did that, but Halo did that with, Halo was like, well, there's three Halo games, and then there's this other Halo game.
Don't talk shit about Halo ODST.
No.
Because Halo ODST is
shit.
Secret best Halo game. So let's
That's what
step
I'm saying,
off.
Though.
Secret
I'm agreeing
best
with you,
Halo.
Patrick.
Heard it
Patrick,
here.
I'm agreeing
okay.
with you.
Jazz
it's not
soundtrack.
The judgment of
Jazz
Halo.
Jazz soundtrack.
It's a different thing. It's like, well, what if we did this version of the world? What if we played in things you didn't get to see, and we'll try other things, and we'll see what happens with Halo.
Side story approach.
We'll do a side story approach, and it, I think, was successful. But I don't remember what happened in Halo 4 and 5.
No.
Like, I don't at all.
I played those games thinking I probably should have read the books to know what was going on, I guess, which is a bad takeaway.
Because Halo 2 is one of the best game experiences I've ever had in my life.
Totally.
I would go – Halo and Halo 2, I would still go to my friend Terry's house in Brooklyn, and he had a huge plasma TV, and then he had a projector in his bedroom, and my friend
– And this
Ptolemy,
is 2004. To place this, properly,
My friend Ptolemy bought an Xbox to leave at Terry's house.
Nice.
And we linked the two Xboxes together to play Halo. So we had a huge – enormous television, giant TV, so when it was split in four, you still had a good size, and a projector split in four, and then there would always be, two other people waiting to come in. And that was, how I got to play games with my friends in New York when I moved here and didn't have my friends that would play Mario Kart anymore. And, in Halo 2, we would still get together, but we could also be in our house if we wanted to.
Yeah.
If we wanted to play Halo 2 and, not go to Brooklyn, we could just play. And so Halo means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And so to, not care, I don't care about the next Halo game. And I also know people that make it, so I should be so psyched about it. Because I know people that are, working hard on making
Halo
good.
I don't think anyone's going to say that, Halo 4 and 5, as disappointing as I found them, were not, made with, genuine warmth and like a dedication. Like lots of people work on games that for whatever reason don't quite click, right? Like someone could be a, you know, Halo 4 and 5 have wonderful combat. Like they nailed the feel of Halo. It was just wrapped in a story and other things that just didn't really click with me. And one thing I wonder, like to pull back the lens a little bit, is part of what was appealing and worked for developers and publishers in the old cycle of how we did video game hardware was that you created new franchises or potential franchises at the beginning of a hardware generation so that you could create sequels and iterate till you got to the end of that hardware generation. And then part of the appeal of seeing that on new hardware was like, oh, you know, we've all this new power. But then it was also a concrete moment to start and take risks again with a new piece of hardware. And we're starting to get away from that a little bit, right? Like, well, Scorpio is like technically a new console, but like it'll be backwards. Like it's going to be blurred with the Xbox One. But like, will Microsoft treat it as essentially, you know, a soft reboot? And that a lot of the sort of new ideas that would have come with, like, we're done with Xbox One, we're moving on to the next thing, will that come with Scorpio? Because, like, Sony didn't really do that with the PlayStation 4 Pro. The PlayStation 4 Pro was sort of an incremental update that just kind of went along the same continuum of the PlayStation 4. Now, granted, eventually Sony is going to have some new piece of hardware, like whether that's a PlayStation 5 or something else. And it makes me wonder if, like, because that sort of, like, TikTok hardware cycle has been disrupted by having like mid-generation hardware refreshes, like there's not a natural time for developers to take that risk in the way that they used to in the past. And so I just, it makes it a confusing time, but it also makes me wonder, because like Judgment, Gears of War Judgment, like part of the reason that game existed was because the 360 was just around for a couple of years later than they expected it to be, right? And the reason God of War Ascension came around because it was the PS3 was around for a little bit longer than everyone else thought it was going to be. So those were just kind of like filling a hole before they pivoted to the next generation. So it's a weird time. I mean, at the end of the day, we would all love more new franchises. It's just it's a complicated sort of space we're in right now in terms of when to take that risk.
Yeah.
There have been 5 Dead Risings. Like, right?
Yeah, they should stop making Dead Rising games.
Well,
I say that as someone, you know, come on. If I'm saying
they should take
it
4 years off and then make Dead Rising.
Right,
and
the like, Dead Rising.
Right.
The Dead Rising. But, like, we're getting sequels to games that, like,
have there been 5?
Yeah, the 5th one just came. Like, the 4th one was like, oh, they made a 4th one.
Wait, are you sure?
God.
I think it's 4.
It's
4.
Okay. This last one was the 4th one?
Yeah, but you know what? That says everything. That
well,
you think there might have been 4, there might have been 5.
There's Case Zero, and like, there were a lot of 2-point whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
so
true.
I was wrong.
Let's
and
call
I,
it, yeah. Okay.
Internet, I was wrong, and I apologize. But also, there have been 4 Dead Rising, and that's
crazy. Yeah, it's too many Dead Risings.
That's right. 3 was the one that was
the
like,
Dead Rose
yeah.
too many goddamn times.
But, yeah, I mean, you'd think there'd be a Sunset Overdrive 2. Right?
Yeah.
Don't even get me fucking started.
I've done that too many times in this podcast. I apologize, Beth.
Sunset
like,
Overdrive 2.
But, like, because wasn't that the way it was, like, you know, when I was a kid? It was like the first game had ideas, and then the second game was great.
Often.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, Assassin's Creed 2. Is a really good video game.
Yeah.
And Assassin's Creed was a tech demo that you bought.
Why Watch like, Dogs the same way. Watch Dogs 1, like yeah. interesting, deeply flawed for lots of reasons we've talked about here. And then Watch Dogs 2, which a game I didn't get around to, but by all accounts and from you know people I trust that played it, was like they took a lot of the criticism to heart and made a game that was a lot closer to what they were promising the first time around.
It feels like it might be that right now there's this fear in doing that game that might do well, that builds an IP, a brand that you can then build a second game off of. Because also they're not building, they're building engines, but like it's a different story than it was like, we built this game from the ground up, so we're committed to at least put out a second one that'll hopefully take the name from the first one and the goodwill and build an audience. And now it's like, that didn't do well. Okay, well, now we need to make a fourth in this series because we have to get people to, you know,
yeah.
we have to pay all these people that work
here. I'm going to be in a bad mood the rest of the day now.
I'm sorry, Patrick. I didn't mean that.
Sunset Overdrive, the modern incarnation of Jet Set Radio, and just...
Oh.
But also, Nier came out this year, and Nier is a sequel to a game that is a sequel to one ending of another game.
Yes. There's always... So there is
hope. It's there, and it's possible.
For Sunset Overdrive 2. As far as I know, it is not currently in development, but from what I understand...
I'm told I'm supposed to tell you about
They
Phantom
wanted
Dust
to make that sequel.
And Phantom Dust. Yeah. Phantom Dust is going to happen or isn't going to happen, but at some point in our lifetime, they were talking about making another Phantom Dust.
They are putting out the remaster, so we can take that.
A conversation happened where they were going to make a sequel to that
game. I know.
But that's good, though. Like... It's good that happened. Like, it is a weird place where there are sequels to things. But, like, I would love more first party, experiments and, like, risks and third party risks like that. Like, it's fun to get excited about a new IP. To take it back to the question about No Man's Sky, like, well, part of it was, like, There was this is the last video game I'll ever buy contingent, which was flawed, obviously. But No Man's Sky sounded like something I hadn't played, and that's awesome. When you buy a new game console and you have like just sequels to things or HD remasters or like a collection, it's awesome to be like, well, in 5 months, a game I've never played before in a style I've never played before comes out. So I made the right choice in buying this $500 thing.
Right, you made an investment.
It's fun to be excited about those new IPs, and that's why also, like, when they don't do well, it's such a bummer. Like, if Prey's not doing well, Prey's the same name of another game named Prey, but it's a new franchise.
It's a whole thing, but it's sort
I
of
hope
the
there's
spirit.
A Prey 2.
Yes.
Because...
Well, yeah.
It's... I mean... Yes, this is Prey 2. But I hope there's a Prey, this Prey 2.
Yes.
There's a sequel to this Prey, I hope, you know?
Yeah.
Because...
I just want to play pretty much everything Arcane makes after sort of the Dishonored and then Prey. Like, both Dishonored games, I think, are phenomenal. I love Prey. So it's almost like I feel this way about studios at this point. I'm almost at the point where I am with, you know, oh, this director, this sort of production company, that kind of thing. I'm starting to feel that way about studios, which I think is a good thing. But we, you know, as long as they're not getting relegated to, oh, yeah, okay, put out this thing your heart is not in, clearly.
Or like, the A-team on Platinum.
Yeah.
Like, Platinum's A-team hits really hard, and their B-team hits really low. And it's like, but you're like, okay, which Platinum made this one? Oh, that the good one? Great.
Yeah.
I always look to see, like, okay, who's designing this one? Because I love Platinum, except for the games that are very bad.
Wow, that's...
I mean, that's fair.
I like things, except for not things I don't like.
Their lows are very low. And their highs are very high. So, like, I'm going to play Vanquish on my PC soon.
Hell yeah, you are.
Hit that smoke button.
Oh, man. I'm going to slide and smoke. It's going to be really fun. Like, it's going to be fun to play Vanquish again.
Hell yeah, it is. And sliding and smoking sounds like a good thing.
Well, just, it's hard to get. We get what British people think America is like a lot. In the rock star genre.
For sure.
But I love what these Japanese developers, like, hey, what if we made Gears of War and you get Vanquished?
Yes.
Like, I want more of that. In the same way that I love, hey, what if we made a Japanese-style RPG, but we're a Dutch studio?
Yeah.
Like, I love that kind of thing. And then you do it enough, and then it becomes like, you know, Russian-style games are its own thing, but they were just... making their own Western games for a while or making their own Japanese games. So I love that. Like, Vanquish is that kind of, like, anime-ass version of American shooters.
I agree. I love all those different kind of lenses. And I'm going to do the quick thing that Austin tries to do every time, which is recapping the games we talked about, which is hard today. But we talked about Flint Hook. We talked about Strafe. We talked a little bit about Prey. We talked a little bit about Vanquish. Yep. What else did we talk about? Am I missing something
Sunset
major here?
Overdrive.
Since I know. I was trying not to mention it because I thought you were in a better place.
We talked about Persona 5.
Persona 5 was in there.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit about a lot of different games.
Yeah, we did. A little bit about Dead Rising and how it needs to take
yeah,
a little
Yeah, maybe
breath,
Dead Rising needs to stay dead.
Oh!
I mean, it probably does.
Yeah, well, Dead
it needs
Rising
to get hard again.
No one bought it, so I actually don't think we're going
to
see
it. It needs to get hard again.
Apparently,
like,
it had a cool selfie function. Somebody was saying that in chat.
Let Dead Rising be hard again. That's what I want.
Let Dead Rising be hard. How about just let it be the selfie game that it should have always been? Where it's only selfies.
That's an indie game that I would definitely buy.
Yeah.
Like,
you put three people from the Dead Rising team. give them some Unity Pro licenses. And
hey, here's what I want. Can I say this on a video game podcast?
Yeah, you can.
I want there's no Blood Dragon 2 or the equivalent of Blood Dragon 2. Like, we got Primal instead of Blood Dragon 2, and that we lost on
that one. The creative director who worked on Blood Dragon presumably has been working on something in the years since. So
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Well, I want Dan Evans to make a wrestling game because he'd do a really good job with that. Dean Evans.
So if you're listening, Dean Evans.
Yeah. He might be.
That's what Pat wants.
I think he can make a really great, weird wrestling game. But I want – that's one of my favorite things of, like, Blood Dragon was just such, like – you can't make a sequel to that probably. But, like, hey, we have this tech. What if we made something weird with it?
Yeah.
Like, I like that a lot. I don't know.
I dig that. I dig that for
sure. That's what this generation of games should be.
All for it. And if you have a question – I think that's probably one. It was a good, meaty question. I felt good about that. It was a good, meaty question. So if you have a question, you can send it into gaming@vice.com with the subject question. We try to read all of them, but we do need to cull the bucket at some point. There's going to be a culling
when
of the bucket.
Austin gets back and doesn't want to talk about video games because of what he's doing this week.
True.
You could probably just do an episode.
We do a whole bucket of culling.
A bucket. Yeah, a bucket.
Call it,
do a bucket cast.
Bucket cast?
Yeah.
Bucket cast.
Yeah. Like just drink some bucket cast.
Butt cast. Of course. All right. I think that's probably going to just about do it for us. Pat, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, no problem. Thank
really
you
Really appreciate
you.
On zero notice. Literally an hour before this podcast started.
We'll pull back the lens a little bit on that. Last night, I just DM'd Danielle going like, hey, if you need me, you know, I'm local. I'm in Brooklyn. Like, I like you guys. And I know that Austin's out of town. And then I woke up, and an hour before I'd woken up, Danielle was like, hey, do you want to be on the podcast today?
I was like, good timing, Pat. What are you doing right this second?
Like, we'll Skype you in, or we'll come to Brooklyn. I was like, yeah, all right. That sounds fun.
It's pretty great that you did that for us. Really appreciate it. That was pretty awesome.
I like talking about games.
Where can people find you on the internet?
So I'm on Twitter at Pat Baer, PATBAER. I do comedy in New York. I'm at PAX all the time, so see me at PAXs. I have a YouTube channel. You can find that on my Twitter. And
you can plug it. We don't mind.
Yeah, it's youtube.com/PatBaer. Right. Put up a bunch of panels from PAX. People that you know, Austin's been on a bunch. Danielle has been on a few.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Patrick, where can we find you online?
You can find me at Patrick Klubik. You can find me three times this week, solo, fatherless, streaming PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. We did a stream this morning.
Pat Bub. Yeah.
The lesson was when you find a murder house that you feel happy with, don't get cocky and try and find a better murder house. Just learn to love the murder house that you found. So that archive, it's on Twitch right now, but there'll be a proper YouTube and Vice Video one going up either later today or tomorrow morning. And we'll be doing that on Wednesday and Friday.
Excellent. That sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to that. I know you got some success.
I got a murder. So you'll have to see, how the murder happened.
You got to the teens, though, right?
I made it to 16,
right?
On the
16.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil too much of what happened if people have not seen, but murder occurs.
Murder. There's
a two-way murder. Sometimes I murder, and then other times I get murdered.
It's player.
You get all the murder you want for a buck, I guess. I mean, you don't have to pay. That'd be weird.
I mean, you don't have to.
You don't have to. I mean, you can find me at Danielle R.I. I obviously am Danielle. I'm not Austin. I'm sorry. Shout-outs to Tim Barnes, producer and engineer. He's on Twitter at Tim Barnes 451. There's no O in there. He's not a Looking Glass project. He is Tim Barnes. Shout outs to our producer, Dylan, who is awesome. He's not on Twitter, but he's pretty great. Just have to take my word for it. Shout outs to Bowen, who lets us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. You can go to waypoint.zone/Bowen, and you can find us on the internet, waypoint.vice.com, new.donk.city. I'm not going to go through all of them because I forget them sometimes, but you know, there's a lot of places you can get to waypoint.vice.com, and whatever your favorite one is, bookmark it and, you know, come hang out with us. We've got beautiful forums. You can find those on the website. We are on Twitter at Waypoint. We are on Facebook, Waypoint Vice, and YouTube at Waypoint Vice. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Pat, again. Really appreciate it. So I'm going to end with be good or be good at it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.